We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
They're gonna kill the love of my life.
Casey!
If I don't go back to what I was doing.
This Friday.
Our line of work is quite brutal and quite ruthless.
How far would you go for love?
You steal a truck, bring it to me, then you make your money.
Is it dangerous?
Of course it's dangerous!
Nicholas Holt, Felicity Jones, with Ben Kingsley and Anthony Hopkins.
All this trouble, all this pain, for love.
Collide, in theaters Friday. Rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13.
When you're running your own business, you're bound to be busy. Too busy. Too busy worrying about your budget. Too busy scheduling appointments. Too busy to build a website for your business. And because you're too busy, it has to be easy. And that's where Wix.com comes in. With Wix.com, it's easy for you to create your stunning website. Go to Wix.com and create your website today. It's easy and free. That's Wix.com.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. You can use the promo code ROTOHOOPS when you deposit for a free contest entry on DraftKings today. All right, it is Tuesday, January 26th. Nick Whalen joined, as I always am, on Tuesdays by RotoWire's own DJ Trainer. A lot to get to today in the NBA. Spurs-Warriors last night, which we talked about how much of a disappointment Warriors-Cavs was, but I feel like this was even more of a disappointment, so we'll break that game down. We'll talk a little bit about the Hornets-Kings thriller from last night, and then, of course, touch on everything that's going on with the Los Angeles Clippers. But how's it going? I know you moved this weekend, right?
Yeah, I did move.
How did that go?
It's still actively going. I don't have an internet connection right now, so trying to push through that. Weird spot in my life, on a transition point in my life. Happy to talk about some b-ball.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start. Let's get right into it. Spurs-Warriors. This is another one that I think I mentioned in conjunction with the Cavs-Warriors game last week, that I like plan my night around. You know, I'm doing this, doing that. I'm getting home by 9:30 and watching this game. And that's what happened. Of course, I had to stream it because it's blacked out on League Pass, and I don't have NBA TV at home, much like a lot of people. So, the feed wasn't great. And the basketball wasn't great either, at least from the Spurs' perspective. This was so similar to me, the way the game unfolded to that Cavs game, right? I mean, kept it close early. The Warriors kind of kept going on little runs. The Spurs were able to claw their way back into it. So many turnovers, though, in that, especially in that second quarter. And the Warriors, you know, that's when they expanded that lead into double digits, close to 20 by halftime.
I'm going to get your blood boiling here, Nick. I called this. I completely said this was going to happen. This is exactly the type of game Popovich wanted.
They didn't throw the game. Way.
They didn't throw the game, but you know what? Did you notice that the coaching alignment was a little bit different? Did you notice, you know, Duncan was out? They were just trying new stuff, doing dummy things out there. This was close to an exhibition game, more so than a regular season game, and that's exactly what Popovich wants. I know the answer to this question, but let me ask you, what is the incentive for winning this game for the Spurs?
Well, I mean, seeding, I guess.
Okay, besides pride. Seeding, is it pride? Seeding and pride.
Pride is probably maybe one thing in this context, at least, that San Antonio doesn't care about,
right.
Really. I wouldn't, you know, the word pride can be applied different ways, but I don't think they care about winning the regular season series or anything like that. But I also don't think they threw this game.
Tim Duncan's
Tim Duncan, but he's also playing, you know, 20 minutes per game. It's not like they sat out Kawhi Leonard.
I don't think they threw this game either, but here's the thing. I think that they just tried some new stuff to see if it worked or not, and they didn't really care about the end result. It was more about trying new things, like even with the coaching staff, even with ball handling, all this stuff. But here's the reason why that I actually think that the Spurs are okay with losing. The first of which is the Warriors don't want to feel like they're behind the Spurs in any way. So you don't want them to roll in and feel like, we still have to be on top of our game. We really need to, you know, keep training, keep doing all this stuff. We need to game plan hard. You want the Warriors to get complacent with the Spurs. So that's the first reason. Second reason is you want the Warriors to chase the all-time regular season record because you know what? They're going to tire themselves out trying to get there.
No, they're not.
Nick.
They have nobody in the top 25 in minutes played this season. Steph's not even in the top 30.
I mean,
I get it. I get
mentally,
sure. But that narrative is so overplayed. They're playing games. These guys are going to be playing these games anyway. I mean, how many games are they going to sit out? The Spurs overrested last playoffs and lost in the first round.
But the result of last games, I mean, the actual result bodes well for my argument, though, right?
There's if no you're, way so you're trying to like hustle the Warriors, basically. Like you're like going in
yes.
and like you don't, you know, you're going to play pool with some guy at a bar and you
yes.
you play poorly for four times so you can sweep them when you meet later. I don't know.
I'm not saying sweep them. I'm
Warriors
just
are better
saying-
than that. They're not a team. They're not a team you can hustle. Yeah, they lost by 30 last night, and I know you know the Spurs called off the dogs, whatever. But 25 turnovers. They've turned the ball over 25 times in a game, exactly five times since 2000. Never since 2011. Like that doesn't happen to this team.
Right. So what was atypical though? The fact that they probably don't really care if they beat the Spurriers or not, or beat the Warriors or not. Steve Spurrier.
The old ball coach coming back.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I don't think they cared. I mean, what was Pop opened up his postgame presser by getting up on the podium and saying, "No, man, we almost had him."
Yeah.
Which is great. Like he doesn't care. They don't care.
He never does anything like that either.
They've been in so many big games that you're gonna lose a lot of big games. You know? You lose some, you win some. It is what it is. It's the regular season. I don't think they care about it, but I also don't think that, you know, so they're sitting Tim Duncan. Greg Popovich didn't go in there and tell them to lose this game. They came out, you know, you could tell they were intense. Parker, visibly, a guy who's usually not that vocal, was, you know, pumping his fist, whatever you want to see, in the first quarter. And, you know, if you're Kawhi Leonard, if you're Tony Parker, Leonard got roasted defensively, which is so rare from him. There were a couple plays that you probably saw on Twitter. You know, I think he went into that game with confidence. I don't think that confidence is by any means destroyed. Yeah, I think that's something that kind of sets the Spurs apart is they don't let one game end up affecting them. But I don't think you thought you were going to lose that game by 30 points. I don't know that you necessarily thought you were going to win by 30 points or win by 10 points. But I think this is a look yourself in the mirror a little bit moment for them, where even if they weren't fully prepared to throw everything at the Warriors to win this game, I don't think they thought it would backfire this dramatically.
Here's a crazy scenario. You let me know how crazy it is. You have lots of assistant coaches, and essentially what you have is you alternate kind of game planning or things that you would check off for the coming game and strategy or whatnot, right? So two assistant coaches look at the next game, and then you have the other two look at the game after that. And so it's not just going from game to game. What if Pop just looked way down the coaching ladder and said, you know what? You get the Warriors game. You've never done this before whatsoever, but let's just give it a try because, once again, we don't really care if we win or lose this game. Is that something that you think is feasible? Like, again, an exhibition game for the Spurs.
Like throwing the game plan, kind of?
Not throwing the game plan. I mean, giving somebody who's never gotten a shot, give them a shot, kind of knowing that, you know, it's probably
but
not going to work out.
Like, why?
Because...
What's the ultimate goal in this?
I just don't see any actual reason why the Spurs would want to win this game. I do think that they wanted to lose last night. They're going to lock up the 2 seed in the West. They're not going to have home court advantage when they play the Warriors. There's no reason to show your hands at any point during the regular season. There's just no reason for them to win this game whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I just think that you can say you don't want to win these games because you basically want the Warriors to get overconfident, right? But at the same time, they're building their confidence winning these games. And, you know, this is a modern NBA. Every team has tape of every single play every other team, you know, throws out there. Even if the Spurs are running their most basic offense since Golden State, they can look at other games and see what they've done. And it is a little bit different, you know, to see it firsthand than to see it on tape. But I don't know. I don't see the benefits in basically throwing 3 or 4 games in the regular season. I think when these teams are so close numbers wise, I don't see why one team would do that and why another team wouldn't.
So last year during the regular season, Paul Pierce playing with the Wizards almost never played the 4. He never played the power forward. In the playoffs, he moves to the 4, and wow, this team is incredibly effective playing the 4, and we knew that the coaching staff knew all along that they were probably most effective playing Paul Pierce at the 4, but they chose to hold that back and used it when it really mattered. So why can't we say the same thing about the Spurs, but on a grander scheme in terms of strategizing for the game, in terms of using your full personnel, in terms of mentally really going after this particular game?
Do you think it would be different if the Warriors lost by 30? Would you be saying they threw the game, or is it because it's the Spurs?
If the Warriors lost this game, they would come out like so vengeful, not only against the Spurs the next time they played them, but the whole entire NBA. Like, you don't poke a sleeping bear, you know what I mean? Like, there's no reason to give the Warriors extra motivation and determination for winning a game. And essentially, if you beat the Warriors, if the Spurs beat the Warriors, you're just giving them added motivation that you wish you wouldn't have given them.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, so we think they just kind of operate differently than the Warriors or than the Spurs in that, you know, you don't expect that same kind of revenge factor from the Spurs. You know, they lost last night. Are they going to come out and dominate whoever they play like we think the Warriors would? You know what I mean?
I think the Spurs are just the most savvy team in the NBA, and it goes from the front office to the coach and through all 15 players on the squad. I think they're all completely on the same page, and a loss like this doesn't affect another team whatsoever. So I wouldn't necessarily that the Spurs will come out and say that they'll be vengeful and incredibly motivated. I just think all along Pop knows what type of strategy he wants to implement against the Warriors, and we sure as heck aren't going to see that at any point during the regular season.
That's all fair enough. So we see these teams again, I think it's in about a month or so, correct? It could be shorter.
I'll check it out. They play 3 more times this season.
They play 3 more times, and 2 of them fall within the last, I think, calendar week of the season, right? So those two, I think, if we were having this conversation, and obviously there's added context, you know, there's games that will be played before those, but these teams meet on April 10th and April 7th. So for the Spurs, that's 2 of their final 5 games. It's their 5th last game, their 3rd last game. If they get blown out in those two, then I maybe entertain the, you know, it's close to the playoffs. You're playing them again in a month with the way that, you know, the playoffs drag on, maybe a month plus. So that would maybe be a little bit more feasible to me. They play again on March 19th.
Which is those
and this one's on ABC. Hey, we can watch it.
Those
three
games are very bunched together. March 19th, right. April 7th, April 10th.
So yeah, 3 times within, you know, less than a month, 3 weeks basically. Based on all you said, what do the Spurs do come March 19th when Golden State comes to their place?
Rest Parker, rest Leonard,
same thing.
Reg Duncan.
And they do the same thing for those final two?
Yeah, why not? If they're going to – I mean, obviously maybe I'm standing on toothpicks right now with this argument, but if we start to see the same thing, lots of turnovers, interesting game plan, the coaches are sitting in different seats than they normally do for normal games in the second, third, and fourth games, then I think, you know, my theory will be proven right.
We'll see. Yeah, I just don't know that there's why if they want to get rest for these guys, like do it on another night. Why does I don't see what
why would you try to beat a team that's
why would
you
not?
You? But, I mean, if you're going to – W's are W's. It doesn't matter who they come against in the regular season. So if you're going to put out a full
effort –
You
have a chance. You're two games behind them in the loss column going into this game. You have an extremely legitimate chance to catch this team at some point. If any of those – any of their major three players gets hurt, they could easily lose, you know, 3 out of 15 games, which maybe is all it takes with San Antonio. Like, do they not value home court as much as they should?
That's – Well,
to me, I mean, that's maybe the biggest thing here.
Yeah, no.
This is a team that had to play Game 7 on the road against the Clippers last year and lost.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I understand it from that point of view, and if you want to poke holes with my argument, that's the thing to do it, is that they're still right behind. Yeah, a little jab move there from Nick. if you're going to poke holes in my argument, do it with that, and that makes complete sense. And I'm throwing it out there now. When we come back to it, when they play March 19th and the Aprils, you know, maybe I'll get back on my soapbox, but I'm willing to admit that it is weird that the Spurs would already be giving up home court advantage throughout the Western Conference. So
I think it is weird just because of what happened last year. And
yeah,
I don't know. It's just such a contrasting argument that Golden State is pushing for this record and San Antonio, which also had a chance and still does technically, you know, to get to 72-73 wins. They just don't care about it at all. Well, one team does. So I don't know. Maybe you're right, and they do end up kind of throwing these next three against Golden State, and it'll be, you know, finally decide, does it matter if you push through the regular season or not? And then you know, assuming they both get to the Western Conference Finals, we'll have an answer to that. But overall, just a disappointment as far as from a
sure.
competition standpoint.
Yeah, and let me just say, I wanted to see a competitive game.
Right.
Like, this is my theory, but I wish these guys would have just duked it out like it was Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. I definitely was disappointed. Love Boban, but I didn't really want to see him on the court at any point last
Such
night.
Soft hands.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little Kings. That was the other big story. There were quite a few big performances around the NBA last night, but none bigger, of course, than 56 points from DeMarcus Cousins, who has 104 points over his last two games. And I mean, he has been statistically probably the best player in the league over the last month, if you want to make an argument from that perspective. And the turnover numbers have been high, I mean, 4 per game, over 4 fouls per game. He's shooting 46% from three on 3+ attempts. That's kind of been maybe not the difference maker for him, but just having that extra dynamic, I think, is allowing him to free up a little more space. I mean, the month of January, and we're getting, this is 10+ games at this point, 12 games, 34.5 points. 3 assists, 14 rebounds, a block, and almost 2 steals while shooting 52%. And this is a guy who historically hasn't shot all that great of a percentage from the field. He's never been higher than 50% for a season. So by far the best month of his career. I think he's basically a lock to be player of the month at this point. He was already player of the week. But last night, 56 points. This is a game that went into double overtime. So there's a little bit of that caveat there. And he went off in the first overtime. I think he had 9 points in that period. I could be wrong on that. But they get to the second overtime. Cousins goes up, or there's a shot, I think, from the corner. I think it was a Rondo three, actually, which was odd. And also odd because he needed 3 points at that point to get a triple-double. But that's the point for another day. Rondo shoots a three. Cousins goes up for the rebound in traffic. Basically two and a half guys kind of draped on him. Just does what he does. Gets the rebound. Goes back up with it. And in the process, gave a little bit of a shoulder to Frank Kaminsky's chest.
Not a little bit.
I mean,
he swung.
Well, watching it live, I thought it was a terrible call. And I'm laying in bed, like, screaming. Because I mean, he was going for 60. He was going to the line for what would have been maybe his 59th point if he hits that free throw. And the way he was playing, you could tell. Like, he knew what he was at. He was going to get 60 one way or another. There was, like, 3 minutes left in the second overtime at that point. But, yeah, they showed the other angle kind of from the top of the basket. And he, you know, part of it is just that's how big he is, that he just sends guys who are 7 feet tall and almost 300 pounds flying. But, you know, it was certainly questionable. I wanted to ask you, first of all, does it matter what the situation is to make that call? Because a lot of it was, you know, on Twitter was, you can't make that call when he has 56, or you can't foul him out on that call. Like, people wouldn't have been upset if that would have been his fifth foul. But the fact that it was the one that fouled him out, I think, is what kind of riled everyone up. Do you think there should be a standard there, or like the context needs to be taken into account when calling us something like that?
No. And if we had Adam Silver on our podcast right now, you know what he would tell him? If it's a foul in the first 30 seconds of the game, it's a foul in the last 30 seconds.
I'm interested to see the ref report from that game that should come out today, because I don't think it was the wrong call. I think if you're...
Well, two things, Nick. The maliciousness with which that arm and elbow and shoulder swung around, even if he doesn't make contact, I mean, it's just too malicious not to have malintent there. Second thing, let's not forget that Marvin Williams, Spencer Hawes, and Tyler Hansbrough all fouled out of this game, and they were almost all those fouls came on Boogie. So are you willing to tell me that 18 of them should have been called in favor of Cousins? 18 fouls on those? I mean, I'm just saying here, if we're going to talk about one foul, let's go back and look at those other 18 and see if those were actually fouls too. And so, again, you can't really focus on one thing, but because everybody was watching at that point, both the Spurs-Warriors game was still going on, but it was over, everyone switched over, we're talking about it today, and I think it's dumb, in all honesty.
Yeah, I think it was just kind of something where everyone wanted to see a 60-point game. You know, happen that often. I think, is the last one LeBron? This was a trivia question a couple pods ago, wasn't it?
I think Kyrie.
He had 55 and 57 last year. Okay. But I think LeBron had 61 against the Hornets a couple years, yeah, like when he was still with the Heat.
Yeah, it was a trivia question. You're right.
That was one where he was so obviously going for 62. He started chucking a bunch of shots in the fourth when they were up 20 plus. But I guess that's kind of what you have to do, unless you're like having a ridiculously on fire game, or you're in a game like this where the other team has guys like Troy Daniels who are just as hot and kind of keeping things close.
Yeah, Troy Daniels. And I got a little note here, Nick. Not sure if you see it. Did you see Troy Daniels' post game interview?
Something about Kemba running the wrong play.
Yeah.
I saw the transcript, but I didn't see the video.
So, you know, Troy Daniels goes off last night, hits the game winner, essentially 28 points, 8 3-pointers, easily career highs in all these different stats. He gets to be interviewed, of course. He wins the game, goes over to the nice sideline reporter. She says, "Tell me about that last play." And he instantly goes, "Well, Kemba messed up the play. But it was all right, so I just shot it."
Kemba was bad in this game. He came out with a nice line, but he just couldn't keep his footing for a lot of the night. Didn't look like he had his normal quickness. He got blocked on what would have been a game winner to go to the second overtime, which was maybe a better play by Willie Cauley-Stein. But still, that shot had no chance getting over him.
Right. Player of the week. So Walker was the player of the week for the East, and Cousins was the player of the week from the West, coming at each other. And of course, you have a lot of injuries for the Hornets, and it makes sense that Walker would be the player of the week because he's just chucking up shots.
Those players combined to go 26 of 55 from the field, and DeMarcus Cousins accounted for 21 of those field goals. Kemba 5 of 25. One of those games that, you know, 24, 8, 4, 4, a block. You're like, wow, really did well, but 13 of 15 from the line helped him out quite a bit. Both these teams got to the line a decent amount. 26 attempts for Charlotte, with over half of those coming from Kemba, and then 32, like you said, for Sacramento. But I mean, that's kind of what Boogie's been doing lately, getting to the line. I mean, that's you. If you're going to be putting up point totals like this, that's what's always such a big factor in it. You know, you're not going to be able to hit 20 plus field goals or make 20 plus field goals per night. And you look at his free throw totals, over 11 per game. As far as attempts this month, 16, 20, 12, 21, 13 games where even if he's not on, you know, from a shooting perspective, he's able to affect the game so much just by getting to the line and being physical.
So we're doing good on time, so I want to pose this question. There's always talk about trading Cousins. Kings should trade Cousins. Why can't anybody ever just realize that Cousins is one of the best players in the league right now? Why would they ever think about trading him? Like, now, what's the plus side of trading him? At some point, you could have said, you know, he doesn't mesh well with the other players, but all this stuff. But he's easily one of the best players. Like you said, he's going to win player of the month. Why the heck would the Kings trade him away?
That's a good question. I think that question has always been posed with the assumption that either his character issues are too much to handle or he wants out. And there's really been no indication of either of those things, right?
Exactly.
It's always... he's been suspiciously loyal to a team that's been terrible to him.
Yes.
I guess personally they've been good to him as far as, you know, the way they treat him, the way they talk about him. But I like this coach. Well, we're going to fire this coach. I'm not sure about this guy. Well, we're hiring him. You know, terrible draft pick after terrible draft pick. Failed signing after failed signing. He doesn't have much of a reason to be there. It's not New York. It's Sacramento. It's not L.A.
If anything, he should be pissed at
right.
the organization for not giving him players to play around.
Right, exactly. And so there's always been, you know, he's always been in talks, it seems, for the last 2-3 years. You know, Boston's kind of always lurking with all those picks. And, you know, I just wrote something that we'll talk about a little bit about Milwaukee, you know, taking a stab at him, which is, you know, a 1% chance that they even consider that. But, yeah, I mean, I think right now, like, you'd be insane to trade him. I mean, this guy is as valuable as just about anyone.
Right. And so we always hate on the Kings for excuse me, their draft picks or their trades or anything like that. Getting rid of Cousins would be a dumb trade. I don't care how you slice it up. Even if you bring in Boston and you get draft picks, we talked about this a little bit last night. Picks are great, but when you can get guaranteed, bona fide players in this league who you know can play, and then you know what their age is and you know how many years are left, you can't beat that when it compares to draft picks. People over-fantasize about draft picks so much. And so I think that trading Cousins away for really anything is dumb. I mean, even two of these...
It depends. It depends because, it's like we've talked about, they don't have pieces around him. So if you can trade him, say Boston is somehow willing to give you like Avery Bradley and two future Nets picks, including the one that might be number one this year, it's like you're not going to... Those things maybe combined don't necessarily add up to what Cousins gives you individually, but you kind of have to look at it from this perspective of, all right, Cousins is putting up these huge numbers. He's really good. But with this roster and with the way the salary works out and what we're able to bring in, it's just not going to work. It's just going to be a Carmelo situation where he puts up huge numbers, but the team's never that good. So at some point you have to mortgage, is it better to be okay and have this really good player or roll the dice a little bit and get rid of this really good player who we know is really good, but have a chance to add two or three good players and end up being a better overall team when it's all said and done. That's why teams do these type of moves, right?
Yeah, no, I understand. I think when you have a talent like Cousins on the court who has shown his loyalty to the franchise, you not only, I hate when people say this, but you owe it to him to figure it out and put the right pieces around him instead of just tossing it in the trash and hoping he picks.
And the way he plays, it's not like he's just going for numbers, you know? The turnovers are an issue, but he's putting up, I mean, for a guy who plays a lot of center, the assist numbers are good. He's become a much better defender than he used to be. That's been huge for them. He's not a guy that you can't build around at all.
If you have 20 seconds left on the clock in a game and you need 2 points to win, DeMarcus Cousins is obviously one of the best, or is probably one of the best options in the entire league.
He's the best paint scorer in the league by probably a pretty good margin, right? Am I forgetting someone?
Al Jefferson a year and a half ago, maybe.
I mean, sure. I think the combination of what he brings is so much better than Al Jefferson.
Yeah, no,
like,
I'm
Al Jefferson in a one-on-one back down scenario is maybe that good, but the dynamism that you get with Cousins, like present day Cousins with the shooting and being able to attack.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm just trying to think of in the paint scores that would be even comparable, and I don't think Al Jefferson at his best is even comparable to Cousins right now, but I think he might be the closest.
Yeah, I think Cousins is sneakily more athletic than people give him credit for, too, because he's such a big guy that he kind of gets lumped into that lumbering center type of role.
He's
a freak. Yeah, I don't really have too much more to say about this one. And it was a shame how it went down because he was going to get 60 points. But, you know, if you want to be objective, that's probably a foul. It's tough that he had to go out on that. I don't think anybody would have cared if it was a no call. Certainly not a call on Kaminsky by any means. And I think Boogie thought it was on Kaminsky.
Think Charlotte got the raw, when it was all said and done, I think Charlotte got the raw deal on if you're going to look at all the fouls, I think they ended up getting the raw deal.
There were some pretty,
they
called a lot of like loose ball fouls in that second overtime. And I thought Cousins was kind of on watch for a little bit there after he got kicked out.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, there were some pretty questionable. Cauley Stein picked up two, basically just diving for a loose ball.
Three power forwards for Charlotte fouled out. You can't tell me that there were legitimately 18 calls. I mean, I need to go back and look at them, I guess.
Yeah.
But when was the last time you remember three power forwards foul out? And it wasn't even like this happened in overtime. I know one of them did, but I think two of the guys, I think Marvin Williams and Haas fouled out in the regular, in regular time. So.
Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, that's true.
You can't
but that's just what happens when you're going up against Cousins, you know? I think he's one of those guys, much like LeBron, that, I think LeBron's probably the epitome of this. And does he oversell fouls and yell at the refs more than he should? Absolutely. Hell yeah. But you also see a lot of times where you'll see a slow motion replay of a layup or something. You don't even notice contact when you watch it in real time because of just how easily he breaks through kind of what are basically arm tackles in football. And Cousins is the same way a lot inside, I think. So, for every, this game, maybe they called a few too many on Williams, Haas, Hansborough, whatever it might be, but there are probably a lot more that they didn't call or could have called.
Okay, fair enough. We don't need to talk about it too much longer. Great game, super entertaining game. I'm glad that happened at the same time the Warriors-Spurs games happened, so nobody was let down too much last night.
Blake Griffin, This is an interesting story. This came out of nowhere. He has a broken hand. He's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks, it sounds like. Could be more, could be a little less. He was already hurt with that quad injury. Was kind of expected, I think, to be back maybe later this week. Obviously, that won't be happening now. But he gets in a fight with a team equipment manager at a restaurant in Toronto. And apparently, it sounds like beat him up pretty good. He was in the hospital, and that's what's going to happen when you're fighting a 6'10". I don't even know how to...
Behemoth.
Just behemoth. Sure, that's a great word. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how do we want to attack this. I think there's been a lot. This has been dominating ESPN and the internet for
as it should.
Well, I'll start with asking you this: do you think that beyond this 4 to 6 weeks that he's going to miss with injury, do you think he should face any discipline, whether it's from the league or from the Clippers?
Well, we got to find. I mean, we have to do the whole investigative reporting and find out what truly happened. But if we're just going to be hypothetical, which why not? Let's just do it and just say that Blake Griffin is just kind of an ass and just, you know, somebody said something to him or the equipment said it to him and just went off on him, then maybe the entire season, in all honesty.
No. Like
he beat somebody. I mean, if that guy went to the hospital, I mean, you can't be doing that, man.
Does it?
You cannot be doing that. You can't be doing that in life.
Sure.
I think he should go to jail for doing that.
Jail?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's maybe a little strong. This would be an assault case at the end of the day. You know, I don't know if he ends up going to jail.
So are we going to say he's a first offender and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that at that point it's in the legal system's hands, and we're in no position to speak about that.
And the NBA always waits. If you remember just a few weeks ago, they didn't even suspend Ty Lawson
until
8 and 9 months
ago. Yeah, and it's confusing because you see Ty Lawson suspended. Yes. I'm like, did he get another DUI? It's like, okay. Oh, this is the one from like a calendar year ago, of course.
Yes.
Which is, you know, in some ways, very admirable that you don't jump to conclusions.
Essentially, they take an opposite stance as the NFL.
Right.
Than the NFL.
I don't even know what the NFL stance is, honestly, but we'll bash them another time. So does it matter to you that, one, it was a team employee, and two, apparently these two guys were friends? One Clippers reporter said that, you know, it was something along the lines of, you know, you hear equipment manager and you just think it's some guy, you know, and he freaked out at him or something. But he said that they were like good friends. They would hang out off the court at each other's houses, things like that. Does that make it better or worse to you? For some reason, for me, that makes it slightly better in that you're not just punching random people. You know, it's somebody that you at least have a history with.
I guess it's just a buddy-buddy fight. I mean, I don't get in any knockdown, drag-out fights with my buddies anymore. Maybe growing up, if you had brothers, you can understand this. But I mean, he knows way better than this.
Weird because he's not – I don't know Blake Griffin, but I would not have expected this from Blake Griffin.
So I'm not putting you on blast, but let's just bring in Okafor here and let's compare situations. Okafor gets into a fight with some rando on the street. Griffin gets into a fight with his friend, but his friend goes to the hospital and you know, critical care. I don't know if he's critical care, but
no.
What we got to talk about the wording of your note here afterwards. So which is worse then, essentially? Because that's what you're talking about. Some rando or a buddy. So what's worse, Okafor's incident or Griffin's incident? And of course, if we had video of Griffin's incident and we saw it, we might be thinking the Griffin is
so what did Okafor get? One game, two games?
I think two games.
Not jail?
Two games and no jail.
And the other thing with Okafor is that there was evidence that he was being provoked, you know, by people saying Sixers suck or whatever it was. But like, is that even provocation at that point? You know, it's one, they do suck. Two, it can't be the first time.
Thousands of people yelling that.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, you can debate for yourself whether that was actually provoked. But I think the fact that it's an internal thing is so much different. It just adds more dynamics. Like if you're the equipment manager, like do you sue Blake Griffin? Do you press charges against Blake Griffin?
Sure. Unless
but your friends allegedly, like it's bizarre.
I mean, he'll win. They're going to do a settlement and all that.
I'm sure. Right.
You wrote unprecedented, and I totally agree. I don't know how to tackle this situation. That's why I'm bringing in Okafor, and that's all I really
I'm very
know
interested
to
see that the Clippers are expected to issue a statement probably any time now as we record on Tuesday afternoon. Chances are it's just we're aware of the incident and are looking internally, whatever. But
let's live on the edge here, Nick. Based on everything you know about Blake Griffin, he's got lots of commercials. You've seen him in the media. You've heard. Are you surprised that this person did something like this?
Yeah, totally. I think everybody is, right? I mean, I think he was kind of seen as, at least in the league, people thought of him as like a fake tough guy, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, but he's, you know, he's funny. He's engaging in commercials. I don't know. It's hard to typecast people. I guess if you would have asked me a month ago or 2 months ago, I wouldn't have said Jahlil Okafor would do that either. I don't know. Maybe we just don't know these guys. Like, there's nothing. Like, I couldn't find one good reason why I would say Okafor would do that over Griffin. You know,
right?
I couldn't think of one. So
obviously, we're living in a
dangerous
zone.
Who knows what the situation is? I mean, maybe Blake will tell us something that makes it seem like it was warranted or something, yeah. Right? And who knows?
Okay,
but a weird story nonetheless.
I have to ask you. Broken Skull Ranch is what you wrote down. What are you talking about here? Because I did some research here. I thought you wanted to talk about something I didn't know. So I did my own research, but I don't think it's related to anything that you're talking about.
On our little outline here, I wrote, you know, Hornets, Kings, Spurs, Warriors, and then Blake Griffin's Broken Skull Ranch, which is just a stupid joke on Steve Austin's Broken Skull Ranch, the TV show.
Okay.
It's like a video or what do you call it? Kind of like a reality.
It's a reality TV
challenge show.
And I found that out. And so I went to Stone Cold Steve Austin's page, went to Broken Skull
Great
Ranch,
page.
Did the read the about, and here's what this ranch is. This is, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but this is his, you know, view of what the ranch is, where everything that grows will cut you, stick you, or hurt you. But also, much of what grows is high protein. High protein means big antlers.
Yes.
Well, as long as you have good genetics and let the deer get old. But anyway, back to the story.
I think Steve Austin wrote that himself.
I thought that's what we were going to be talking about today. So I came prepared and ready.
No. Maybe that was a bit of a misnomer. Nobody's skull was broken as far as I'm aware. But
okay.
I don't know. I think I was watching that for like 5 minutes last night after I was kind of in a depressing stupor of like shock after the third quarter ended in Golden State. And I was like, I was planning on watching this for another 45 minutes. Now I need to find something. And Steve Austin's Broken Skull Ranch was there for me in my time of need. Yeah, anything else with Blake Griffin? I mean, is there anything else that you want to, any other angles to this story that haven't already been beat to death?
Well, I will say, easy with your word choice there. I will say there were no...
that was bad. Yeah. That was not intentional.
November 11th, I believe... The Clippers played the Dallas Mavericks, and for a good portion of that game, Dwight Powell, second-year man Dwight Powell, who plays for the Mavericks, was faced up against Griffin. And for whatever reason, Griffin was really, like, giving it to him, pushing him around, just yelling at him, doing all this stuff. And I didn't know if it was kind of like, you're young in this league initiation stuff, or I just never realized that Griffin was kind of a bully, for lack of a better term, on the court. And so when I heard of this story, my mind immediately went back to that because I just didn't understand why Griffin was treating him so meanly. And I didn't see anything from Powell to warrant that behavior.
Yeah, he's not known as any kind of instigator.
Right. And so that's the only other angle I would take that, of course, I was like, oh, I'm not surprised. I remember this, blah, blah, blah. Hindsight's always 20/20, but that's the first thing my mind went to when I heard this story.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not... Like we said, we're not really in a position to speak on Blake Griffin's character by any means, and it's just a weird scenario, and it's weird for the Clippers now because, you know, what do you do? Your team, they're going to be fine as far as, you know, making the playoffs, but this is going to knock him out until probably early March, and at that point, it's, you know, 2 months to kind of get things going before the playoffs, so... Weird situation for Griffin. Who knows what's going to happen to him, you know, from a public eye standpoint. Weird situation for the Clippers, who just traded away one of their backup power forwards, you know, a guy who wasn't playing a ton of minutes in Josh Smith. But
do they trade now?
That's a good question. I don't think so, just for depth reasons, because unless you're going to plan on bringing in someone else, which maybe they could do, I don't know. I don't know what the situation was between him and Doc. Probably not that great, so maybe that had something to do with it. But
I think the reason why he's out the door is for chemistry issues, and so if you're going to do it at one point, you probably can do it at any
other
point.
Sure,
so.
If you're looking at it from a peer personnel perspective, they probably don't do it, but you never know what's going on behind the scenes. All right, be part of all the action all season long at DraftKings.com, the official daily fantasy basketball partner of RotoWire. With DFS, you don't need to spend months, micromanaging a roster. You can play whenever you want. You can pick a new team every time you play. Challenge your friends in a custom league to prove you're the superior GM, or square off against basketball fans from around the country for huge prizes. Go to DraftKings.com now. Enter the promo code ROTOHOOPS. That's ROTOHOOPS. That'll let you play free with your first deposit. DraftKings, the official DFS partner of RotoWire. That's promo code ROTOHOOPS. Enter that at DraftKings.com. So you have in here, DVR is no longer our agent. Is that on Twitter or officially?
No, on Twitter.
I haven't talked to him about that.
I feel like we need to impose this, bring him in here, you know, have a confrontation about
I think before you came to the office, I already made plans to fight him in the parking lot.
Yes,
tonight over pizza, like to over pizza toppings.
Yeah. Would you like to discuss the sides of that?
I don't like bacon, and people feel pretty strongly about bacon. I don't know if that's a Wisconsin thing or just a general thing, but you tell someone you don't like bacon, that's basically an invitation legally, I think, to fight you. Like, people are just like, what?
Well, that's what you took it as.
Yeah, and but most people do. I'm saying, like, I've told people before, you know, it's my deepest, darkest secret. I don't like bacon. And people just... That's just not okay. Like, it's not a, that's not an opinion that you can have.
Well, thank you for saying that and not making me do it for you. But I will say, of course, me being me, I decided to jump into the middle of your guys' argument and bring up some past issues that you guys have because me being instigator.
Here we go.
You know, I love to. So I just kind of, you know, douse your fight with a little furry jacket fire.
It's a very flammable jacket, probably.
Long-time listeners to the pod are probably laughing hysterically now. If you don't know what I'm talking about, rewind 2.5 months, maybe.
I bought a jacket with fur on the hood, innocently enough, and and I wore it to the office, and little did I know that wasn't an okay thing to wear, apparently, but I don't know. It's gotten mixed reviews. Not great in the office, but outside of the office, people seem to like it. It's a nice coat. That's all I'm going to say about that.
I still like you, for all your faults.
Even with the coat?
Even with the bacon.
All right, let's talk about the Cavs. You know I like talking Cavs. And I think I recently outed myself as a LeBron fan on the Bucksball podcast, which really drew some ire.
You've done that here, too.
Yeah, I know. People know it here, hopefully.
Finally,
but the Cavs, they won. They beat the Timberwolves, the Timber Pups, last night. First win under Tyronn Lue. Obviously, David Blatt was fired last week. They played terribly against Chicago. Wasn't a game where, I shouldn't say they played terribly, they shot the ball terribly. It was very reminiscent. I think I saw one Cavs beat writer say it reminded them of that opening game last year when LeBron came back and they lost to New York. I mean, that was so much hype. You know, I think one of the first plays of the game, LeBron had a fast break, was fouled, finished it, and, you know, flexed the arms and at the crowd. And, you know, that was kind of one of those, oh, man, he's back. They're going to be dominant. And then the rest of the game, they just couldn't hit a shot. And that's kind of what it seemed like. They defended really well. And LeBron said that after the game, still talking about the Bulls game, that, you know, he's like, yeah, you know, the offense will come. I thought we defended really well. And that was true. They didn't defend quite as well last night. I mean, giving up 107 to Minnesota, but they're also trying to play faster. So I think there's a little bit of an adjustment period there. Did you find it interesting at all that I think some people thought LeBron kind of called out the team's conditioning after that Bulls game? He said something along the lines of, you know, we want to start playing faster, but we're not in shape for it right now. And I think some people thought that was maybe a perceived slight at Love or Kyrie, but I think it was just, you know, we're going to be playing. If we want to get 5, 6, 7 more possessions, you know, per game, then we're going to have to run. We're going to have to be in better shape, you know. And I don't think anyone's necessarily out of shape. At this point in the season, if you're out of shape, that means you've been injured or you haven't been playing or, you know, I don't know. Is there a good example of somebody who's still out of shape at this point? There's just different kinds of shape. And there's a good point because the Cavs play so slowly that if you start running up and down, even 2 or 3 possessions in a row, it affects you. I mean, we play hoops every couple of nights.
don't bring me into this.
No, I'm not trying to say it's the same thing, but like it's on a very, very micro scale. You realize what it's like. Oh, you know, like if you come down on a fast break, miss a layup, have to run back, get the rebound and have to run back again, you're literally just going to be more tired. That's how it works. So I don't think I'm too worried about the Cavs conditioning at all. I think I'm more worried about them making a pretty drastic, what it sounds like, style adjustment mid-season while adjusting to a new coach already.
First of all, thank you for mentioning me in the same stanza as LeBron James' fitness level and my fitness level. Appreciate
that accurate
one. Every single night we get into the rhetoric of the post-game locker room interviews with these guys, right? I mean, we talked about Love pointing over to James and saying it starts with our leader over there and going all crazy. And James saying we got a lot of inexperienced guys and pointing at Love and Irving. And then James says, we're not in shape. And what does that mean? And all this on and on and on and on and on. The funny thing is, Nick, if the Warriors weren't so good and they were just the Warriors of a couple years ago and the Spurs are just, you know, they're still good. The Spurs have always been like that. We would think the Cavaliers were the best team in the league, right? I mean, this team is still very, very good. If we're going to stack it up over the last 10 years, we're going to say that this team is contending for a title 8 out of the last 10 years at least. Or
any year that doesn't have – any year that's not last year and not this year.
Exactly.
They probably don't beat that Spurs team that beat Miami.
So this team and this media and this fan base is beating themselves up because they cannot live up to the Western Conference.
I don't even know what the standard is. They're 31-12.
Right.
They're 31-12 without they lost the majority of those games without Kyrie. Like,
yeah.
I think they're right where they should be. I don't think they've overachieved or underachieved, really. Maybe slightly underachieved. I think Golden State and San Antonio set such an unrealistic standard. And to be fair, that is the new standard right now. You know, it's a ridiculous standard, but that's what it is. And if you want to be the best team, you have to have four losses right now. That's just how it works. But I think Cleveland views themselves as that good, right? So, like, if Golden State was sitting right, what are the Cavs right now?
Well,
they are 31-12. If Golden State was 31-10 or 33-10, I think there's no panic, right? The Cavs are right there. They're just as good as Golden State. It's just the fact that Golden State is that good is inspiring panic for a team that's playing pretty well. I mean, the Cavs are 19 games over 500 right now, almost to the All-Star break.
Yeah, I completely agree with
you. They were 19-19 at one point last year.
So the standard for the Cavs should be last year. That's fair, considering they, by the way, went to the finals and did pretty admirably considering they didn't have their second and third best players. And so if the standard is last year, they're miles ahead of it, right? They're completely miles ahead of it. And so we all just need to take a step back, realize we're only halfway through the season, injuries are a real thing in the finals, and the Cavaliers are in an incredibly great position to make it to the finals and win the finals. They have the easiest route to the finals of your top three, top four, or top five teams in the NBA. They're doing just fine.
It is now, funny, too, because Cavs fans aren't worried about anyone in the East.
No.
You know, you're worried about...
We're stacking up against a
there's
team
still
you
that,
play
there's,
twice a
the
year.
The assumption is that we'll get to the finals and lose, and that would be a huge disappointment. Like,
right.
It's crazy. It really is crazy, but that's what happens when you have LeBron James.
Yeah, no, I'll say this. It's not necessarily the Cavs. I mean, it is the Cavs, but it's any team that has LeBron James has had expectations. If you don't win the finals, failed year. And it's if LeBron leaves in 2 years, it'll be the same expectations. If
he's
he goes
not going
to Phoenix,
anywhere.
Dallas, anywhere. I'm just saying that it's not a Cavaliers thing. It's not a Cleveland fan base thing. It's a LeBron
yes.
James thing. And that should speak and testament to how great he is.
It's a LeBron thing, and it's also, to a slightly lesser degree, a LeBron and Cleveland thing because of the history. You know, this is a completely unprecedented situation.
Unfinished business, I understand.
Right. And it would almost be different if he had gone to Miami and struck out all 4 years and then came back, because there wouldn't be that expectation. But he went there, proved that he could do it in back-to-back years, and after that Spurs loss in the second finals, you know, the rematch with the Spurs, I think, you know, people around the Heat organization or LeBron supporters were crushed, but it was also a situation where, holy crap, the Spurs played well. You know, it was like, they can't do that again. Like, well, you know, with LeBron back here, we'll be the better team now. And I think it's been a little bit surprising how sustainable the Spurs have been, which it shouldn't be at this point, and then just how ridiculously good the Warriors are.
Yeah, you toss out the outlier, and it just so happens that the Spurs and the Warriors are kind of still outliers this year, you know? Two of the historically best regular season teams of all time. You got to throw them out the window. You know what you get? You get the Cavs as one of the best teams in the league. I mean, wouldn't the Warriors or the Spurs kill to be in the Cavs' position right now? Then they wouldn't have to play each other?
Probably, or the Thunder, yeah.
Or the Thunder, or any team in the West. Well,
yeah,
I mean,
I think
going
any,
too far down. But
no,
you know
no,
I mean.
No, I think so. I think
I'm saying that the teams in the West with better records than the Cavaliers would much rather trade places with the Cavaliers.
Yeah, I think you...
In terms of route to the finals. Here's the thing. Let's think about it this way, Nick. I don't think people are realizing it this way. I know mathematicians are going to hate me for this, but in theory, the Cavs have a 50% chance to win the finals. The Warriors have a 25% chance, and the Spurs have a 25% chance. Now, I know that's rudimentary, and it's very dumb and use of percentages, but if you think about it, the Cavs have a better odds to make it to the finals
yep.
than the Warriors or the Spurs, right?
No,
because
yeah,
we think
course.
That the Spurs and the Warriors could each beat each other.
Yeah, I think, yeah, there's just that chance that you get knocked out early. Yeah, I just think it's, I mean, it comes down to if you're the Cavs, you have to take care of business in one series, whereas with the Spurs, you have to take care of business conceivably in two
or
series.
Or the Warriors.
Or
right.
the Warriors, sure. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's if there were to be a hypothetical midseason realignment, yeah, I think they would love to trade spots. But I don't know. It's not going to happen. You know, it's an interesting discussion to have, but it's clear that it's a tougher road in the West, even with the East being deeper.
So we haven't even talked about the coaching situation
no.
yet. I was incredibly surprised. Not that
this was one of those check five times that it's a real Woj account before you actually say anything?
Yeah. Because he changed his Twitter handle recently. You got to go back and look at all that stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, reactions-wise, I'm not shocked. I was a little bit disappointed, to be honest, with some of the reactions from other coaches, and I'm certainly not in no position to criticize their viewpoints, but the unanimous support for David Blatt was interesting. You know,
Wait, you're disappointed about the support for Blatt from other coaches?
I'm disappointed in what I saw as somewhat blindly supporting him because he's in the coaching fraternity, and there's certainly something to be said for the value of that. Especially when it sounds like people in Cleveland didn't really have his back. You know, you have to have somebody supporting him. But the comments, I think, of a Spolster that said, like, you know, this is a dangerous firing for the coaching profession, which is true to a degree, but they're just looking at the record. If you're David Griffin, I think he's handled this whole situation perfectly. He took all the responsibility. He even said I think his quote was, you know, it's a little bit of a slight to him and his group that everyone thinks this was LeBron's decision. He's the one who was in the locker room observing, in the film rooms, you know, as all these stories leak out. I don't care what your record is. If you notice that your team isn't playing with, you know, the vigor and the enthusiasm that you're going to need to beat good teams, then of course you make this move, right? I think they lost to the two teams that they're most worried about this season, one of them in huge blowout fashion. Yeah, I don't care if your team is going on the road and beating Phoenix or returning home and beating the Clippers. That's all well and good, but if this team is not where it needs to be to beat these good teams, then what are you doing? Like, if they keep David Blatt, they're just playing for what happened last year, in my mind.
But to use the argument that we both kind of constructed together, the template or the check mark has to be last year. And he was doing better, and the team is doing better. And in respect to last year, just to play devil's advocate with what you just said, there, like I said, there's this overwhelming fear and this anxiety about this team that's one of the best teams and could always be challenging for a title over the last 10 years if you dropped it at any point in the last 10 years. I think that it already has been there already has been dangerous precedent set for the coaching industry, NBA coaching industry. So Kevin McHale earlier this year was a dangerous one. And you know what was the biggest one that all the coaches should just realize this is the standard? Is George Karl getting fired when he won Coach of the Year. Like, this is nothing new. Where, I mean, maybe these coaches are coming around to it and it scares them, but this is very much the real standard right now is championship or bust. If you can't win a championship every single year, you're on the hot seat. That's what it is.
It just comes down to player happiness, really. You don't want to play. You're not going to play your best or exert your best effort. And there's these reports that, you know, the Cavs half tanked a game against Portland or something after the Christmas Day loss to the Warriors. If the players are doing things like that, you can't keep a guy around just because of the record. I think that's just ridiculous. Like, if people aren't happy with the performance, and clearly the general manager who's making these decisions isn't happy with the performance, he has the right to make these moves. Basically what it came down to for me is David Griffin had to look in the mirror and say, are we winning these games because of David Blatt, or are we winning them despite David Blatt? And I think it was the latter, clearly, right?
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but it is kind of funny that we just set up a whole argument about the team saying the standard should be last year and they're outperforming it, and you know, we're kind of turning back on that. So I understand if people want to chastise us for that, but I do agree with you. I think things could be better.
They're overperforming last year's expectations because of talent. When the going gets rough, you have to have, you know, harmony between
Mark
the coaching
Jackson
staff.
Is a good. I mean, the team was on the rise, right? Mark Jackson was on the rise. The team was on the
exactly.
rise. Steph Curry was budding into a talent. Klay Thompson, all of this. But you know what? The Warriors organization felt like things could have been better. They do it, and it works out for them. They were completely right.
But the other thing with that is, you know, like, we'll never know. Maybe they'll go on and win the title with Mark Jackson last year. But it still doesn't mean that the players are happy. And you have to, I think if you want to build something in Cleveland, this isn't just going to be a one-year run. I mean, the goal is to get a title. Cleveland's in such a unique situation as a city and with LeBron coming back that they just want a title. And, like, LeBron only has to win one, right? Like, they're not going to be disappointed if they win it this year and never win another one. Like, that'll be fine.
No. And it counts for his legacy.
Yeah.
It counts as two.
But if you're
a GM,
like, your job is to keep this team good every year. And you can't have a coach out there who the players clearly don't respect. A coach who has, you know, had some kind of high-profile coaching you know, physical coaching gaffes that have kind of led to that disrespect, I think, from the players. And I don't know. I didn't have a problem with it. I was surprised. Certainly, I don't think anybody wasn't surprised. Maybe some of these Cavs journalists who had apparently been sitting on the story for a while, they probably weren't surprised. But I think it's justified. I think if you are not happy with your coach, you shouldn't let the results necessarily dictate something.
Hypothetical question for you, since we're talking about the state of coaching in the NBA, doesn't it seem like it would actually be better, let's just say next year, to take over a team like the Minnesota Timberwolves and have job security for the next 3 to 4 years as you're progressing than to take over a team like Billy Donovan is right now with the Thunder, where he could be fired in 2 years because he had the talent already, boom, right there. So if you're a coach in the NBA, you're trying to make things, maybe you're making the jump from college, isn't there a lot of evidence that you would actually want to be with a bad team to start out with if you care about job security?
If you're a rookie coach and David Blatt, you know, certainly doesn't think of himself as a rookie coach, then yeah, I think it's a little bit easier maybe to cut your teeth with a younger, talented roster like Minnesota. I talked with a friend last night about him, and it quickly turned to all caps from his end. I think when you have a team put together like this Cavs team is, and like the Thunder were, or still are, I guess, you know, under Scott Brooks, the job of the coach more or less is to kind of not mess things up. And I think that's what David Blatt was doing, and that's what they feared was going to happen, was that he's not killing us. We're 19 games above 500. The coach isn't killing us, but the players don't like him, and if it comes down to it, he might ultimately hurt us more than he can help us. And I think Tyronn Lue is a guy, whether you think he's a LeBron pawn or not, that at least has some respect, and or has a respect to the players, and is a guy that has, I think, a pretty high floor as a coach, and maybe not the highest ceiling. You know, he's not going to come out with some scheme that turns them all of a sudden into the best offense in the NBA, but he's also going to let the players, I think, decide what ultimately happens with this team and not make it something where you say, man, if they had a different coach, maybe they would have won.
Fair enough. But if he's taking over some young team, I don't know if we view him as, wow, he's going to be a mastermind that's really going to take this.
Tyronn Lue?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I don't think so either.
But for this particular situation, yes. You mentioned that he's essentially a player's coach and whatnot, but what about the remarks he made post-game?
Some weird quotes. He's coming out hot with these quotes. Yeah. The first quote last week, right after the firing, you know, it was, what are you going to do differently? And you said something along the lines of, I'm not going to do anything differently. I'm just going to do things better. And I don't know. I didn't watch the live clip. I've just seen it repeated over and over. I don't know if that was intentional or if he just doesn't talk to the media that much.
But then last night he kind of solidified his crazy post-game comments with saying, right, that I talked to the team and I told them that they're focusing on their own personal brands too much in respect to Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving. Did you think that that's
He basically said you have to defer to LeBron.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's legit.
Do you think that's a legitimate thing that he should, one, be saying to his team behind closed doors, and two, saying it in, you know, to the media?
If he truly has the respect of the locker room, then yes, because then they'll listen to him, right? In theory, it's maybe not the best news they want to hear, but it also doesn't mean, like, when you hear defer to LeBron, like, that doesn't mean they're never going to shoot the ball. It just means that when LeBron's on the court, LeBron is the focal point. That is a proven championship formula for two championship teams, and it's a proven winning formula. I think it's just kind of it's something that probably needed to be said a long time ago and maybe wasn't said because, you know, the previous coach, it sounded like, didn't necessarily have the rapport with the players to say something like that and have it not react poorly for him, if that makes sense. Is that something David Blatt could have told Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love and that they would have really taken to heart? Or do you think they would have just brushed it off or become angry at him?
I just think he's coming out guns a-blazing for no reason at all. I mean, take a note from J.B. Bickerstaff.
I like the confidence.
Do you?
I do. I like guess. It because from all you read about David Blatt, it was that just he just couldn't say what he wanted to say because of what happened to him. And, like, I think Tyronn Lue is just saying, I'm gonna do all the things that I thought that David Blatt should have told you guys a year ago. I'm going to lay it out now. What do they have to lose?
I understand. It's just so different from my own personal philosophy. Whenever I come into a new situation, I lay low, and then, you know, once I have a good assessment, boom, let's make these changes. But this guy's coming out hot, and he could go down in flames if things don't turn
out. Just out of curiosity, this doesn't matter really for this discussion, but you played sports growing up. What kind of coach did you respond best to? A fiery, get on your case type of coach, or a, you know, relaxed coach who's just kind of like do whatever, or somewhere in the middle?
It's tough to say because we're talking about grown men trying to adhere to grown men. And I will say that I was so scared of just my personality. I was so scared of the get in your face coach that I guess I would say I actually performed better. I was just scared out of my mind. And so I actually did better than the buddy-buddy kind of coach. But again, you know, I'm a little kid trying to figure out what the world is like. So it's hard to compare.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, totally. I mean, there's money involved. There's, you know, contracts that if you...
Lots of pride.
You know, well, meeting benchmarks to get kickers in your contract.
What about you, though?
Definitely a calm coach.
Because you played a lot of competitive
I played
basketball.
The sports, right. And yeah,
did you play AAU?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
My coach... Our AAU coach, shout out to the great Liam Farrell. Yeah, you know, I mean, he was kind of known for definitely being a player's coach. Maybe too much sometimes, but it's a lot of fun. I like that style a little bit more. I think the playing out of your mind because you're scared thing, that would like backfire for me. I was never comfortable, you know, because you're always worried about, you know, not only are you making a mistake, you're also going to get an earful about it. So I just think that kind of compounded any kind of mistakes that you might make. But people probably don't care what about our coaching philosophies. Last thing I want to touch on with the Cavs. You mentioned the quote, you know, he kind of called out Love and Kyrie. Clearly this big three still isn't meshing. It hasn't been a disaster, first of all. It hasn't been a complete disaster.
You've said numerous times over the last 30 minutes, this is not a disaster team.
You know, when people say it's not working, should they trade Love? Basically, all that means is they can beat 28 teams every night, but they can't beat two teams. And the way the NBA works right now, that's a big problem. But there's some reactions like this has been a just complete failure, and it really hasn't at all. I just wanted to point out, like, first of all, it's pretty much unprecedented for guys to come together in this way. And the only other time recently is the Heat, and the same thing happened with them. But the guys were, you know, there's a little bit older. You know, Dwayne Wade, there wasn't a Kyrie kind of factor with that team. It was veterans who were all in the same draft class, who were all, you know, buddies, who all had the same vision. And I'm not saying that Love and Kyrie don't have the same vision as LeBron.
Let's just stay on this because I know you have a lot of different examples, but I want to point out Mario Chalmers was the Kyrie Irving of that team. Do you know what I mean? Not in the same way, but in terms of him being mature basketball
player. Playing the same
player.
Position.
No, but do you know what I'm saying? Where these three were just...
They were hoping to get 2 3-pointers per game and decent defense from Mario Chalmers.
And he still prevented himself from doing that for that team. He didn't understand his role on the team.
I don't know. I thought he was pretty good.
Put in his place
he had some
so
huge games in the
over
finals
over
the years.
I agree.
He was
good,
terrible in that last
saying,
finals, but the finals before that, he was huge for them.
If you're trying to look at a player who doesn't quite understand what it takes to be a championship team, it seemed like at least the big three with Miami made him out to – they were always having to whip him back in line and get in line. And then if you're trying to compare it to Kyrie or even Kevin Love, where LeBron is just doing this himself to those two guys, it's not Wade, Bosh, and LeBron. It's LeBron trying to do it with everyone else on his team. Does that make sense? I'm really harping on the fact that they yelled at Mario Chalmers every single game.
I just think they weren't – it was not Mario Chalmers' team. He wasn't – they need Kyrie to win a title. They didn't need Mario Chalmers to play well, to play at an elite level to win a title. But the point I wanted to make is that there are some tandems, KD and Russ. They were drafted together. They came up together. It's a little bit different. And even them, I mean, they've gotten as much scrutiny as just about any superstar tandem. And it's also a good point to note that there just aren't that many superstars, super superstars playing together like this in Cleveland. So there's not that much precedent for it working out. You know, it's not like this is this huge problem and why can't these guys figure it out? It's like, what superstar threesome has ever figured it out right away like this? And the Heat only figured it out because Chris Bosh finally said, you know what, fine. He had some games in the finals where he would just score 2, 4, 6 points, get 8 rebounds, and he was fine with that. People, when Kevin Love does that, it's not, oh, he's making such a great sacrifice. It's, man, what is he doing? He can't score.
Great point.
So, you know. Look at the other like superstar or star tandems that we have in the league. Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler. Rose not a superstar, but he's still a superstar as far as stature, you know, for that team. What happened in the beginning of the season? Rumors they're not getting along. Miami's big three. They started out that first year what 7-10 or something like that. Worse than the Cavs. Lakers with Dwight and Nash and Kobe. That was a complete disaster. Dwight and Harden in Houston, they reportedly don't like each other. Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, they all apparently didn't like each other by the end. It doesn't really work that well. And if you're going to make it work, somebody has to take a back seat. At least one person has to take a back seat. And you have to have a strong enough coach and a strong enough supporting cast that you can kind of weather these storms, because it's not all going to be perfect when you have three guys on max deals who are all max caliber players.
Great points, Nick. It really is just a good thing to bring up in all these examples. The funny thing is, I think that Love is easily the guy who has already said that, probably behind closed doors. You know, if I only put up 2 points, but I get 8 rebounds, you know, let's do this.
But are they really cool with that? That's what you have to actually buy in. You can't just say it.
Probably not. But here's the thing. He's shown no indications that he's unhappy with that. I mean, but the problem is that the media and the fans chastise him for not competing. So he's in a rock and a hard place where you know, he wants to appease his teammates. He's willing to take a back seat, but he's still hurting his brand, Tyronn Lue.
Exactly.
And so he's in a rock and a hard place. And he not only on the court, but off the court, he's just trying to figure out where he fits in with this team. And he's trying really hard. I mean,
right.
I think he's legitimately trying, but yeah. He's just getting it from all angles, from us and everywhere else.
One, the Bosch comparison, you know, that's so obvious because we've basically seen this whole soap opera unfold 4 years ago, 5 years ago. The Bosch thing was a little bit different because I think the fans, especially year two, year three of that run, they started to see what he did defensively. And it was, there were games when Bosch would be terrible on offense. You know, the confidence wasn't there. There was that spree where, I think, was it against the Pacers in one of the conference finals where, like, I mean, he was just getting killed left and right in the media. But I think Cleveland fans were able to see the value that he brought defensively, that even if he wasn't shooting it all that well or scoring it all that well, he was rebounding. He was playing great D. He was helping them win these games in that regard. With Love, he'll struggle offensively, and then he'll have like two Vine-worthy defensive plays that just make it so much easier to pile on. So I think that has something to do with it. But the brand part of that quote that you mentioned from Lue, he said something about, you know, we got to buy in. You can't be worrying about your own brand. That might strike a chord with me if I'm Kyrie or if I'm Love, that accusation that you're playing for your brand, because you're in year two and a half or one and a half of this thing. You know, I think by that point, you kind of have to be beyond that, or at least you would think that you're beyond that.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, the fact that Kevin Love committed back to the Cavaliers would say, I care about winning more so than my brand, because he could have went to L.A. or something like that and been the face of L.A. basketball,
yes.
Of professional basketball in L.A. So for Lue to say something like that is a little short-sighted in the fact that Kyrie, you know, Love, they could go anywhere and be the brand of an entire state or region of the United States if they wanted to. They chose not to.
Sure.
Maybe not so much
and that,
Kyrie
and like,
at this point. But
on paper, that should be enough. You know,
yes,
but it's
exactly.
not. It's not. You no, have to. You have
not.
To look like you're having fun. You have
not.
To look like everyone's playing well. It's, yeah, it's interesting. But before we get to trivia, Wix.com, a presenting sponsor of the RotoWire Basketball Podcast. You need a website? Why not do it yourself with Wix.com? No matter what business you're in, Wix has something for you. It's used by more than 75 million people worldwide. Wix makes it easy to get your website live today. You need to get the word out about your business. It all starts with a stunning website. Hundreds of designers made customizable templates to choose from. The drag and drop editor, there's no coding needed. You don't have to have any crazy computer knowledge. You don't need to be a programmer or a designer to create something beautiful. You can do it yourself with Wix.com. Wix empowers business owners to create their own professional websites every day. When you're running your own business, you're bound to be busy, probably too busy, especially too busy worrying about your budget, too busy worrying about scheduling appointments, too busy to be building a website for your business. And because you're too busy, it has to be easy, and that's where Wix.com comes in. With Wix, it's easy and free. Go to Wix, that's W-I-X.com, to create your own website today. The result will be stunning.
My turn to look like a fool. Let's do it.
Yeah, we came out. I think we did all right. I did all right last week, and you were pretty hot 2 weeks ago in trivia. So I think we're on a better run lately than we have been. But yeah, let's jump right into this.
We could scratch each other's backs one day and share the information and both look intelligent, but instead we try to humiliate each other.
Right? Yeah,
is,
that would not be
it's
fair.
More fun than
I don't want to do
probably.
That. So, DJ Trainer, there are four Western Conference teams right now averaging more points per game than any team in the East. Which four teams are they?
Definitely the Warriors.
Number one.
I would think the Thunder.
You would think correctly.
I want to say the Spurs, but I'm going to hold off. And
you got the first two. Golden
Clippers.
State and OKC. Clippers are number five, and they are... Oh, so I guess there are different numbers on ESPN and Basketball Reference. So we'll go with ESPN since I have that up. Apparently there are five teams that are ahead of any team in the East in scoring. The Clippers are one of those, so you're correct there. You have Golden State, OKC, and the Clippers, so two more are ahead of Boston, who's the highest scoring team in the East.
It wouldn't be trivia if we didn't actually retract our question somewhat.
Yes.
So I guess I have to say the Spurs.
No.
Okay. All right.
One of these you think is kind of obvious. The other one is...
I think I know the not so obvious one. Or it's between two teams. The Kings?
Yep. That's what I was thinking of.
Yep.
So one more.
Maybe the Rockets?
Yes. Okay. There we go. Not bad.
I knew when I read this question, I was like, Kings, they're always scoring over 100 points.
Yeah, they are. They're always allowing 100 points too, but they're scoring over
100. They give up the most attempted threes per game. Yeah, that one made sense.
All right. Let's look at the 2011 NBA draft.
All right.
I'm going to give you a list of players, and I want you to tell me in what order these guys were drafted. So, you know, you don't need to tell me the exact number, but you just have to rank them. Let's see how many are there. One through four. First guy, Tobias Harris. Second, Kawhi Leonard, Brandon Knight, and Klay Thompson. So which of these guys was drafted first?
I think Brandon Knight coming out of Kentucky, was he first?
He was. He was eighth overall.
Okay. And then I would say Tobias Harris.
That's incorrect.
Okay. Then I would say Klay Thompson.
Yes, Klay Thompson was second. He was 11th overall to Golden State.
Then I would say Harris and then Leonard.
You would be incorrect. Kawhi Leonard, 15, to the Indiana Pacers. As I'm sure you recall, they dealt him for George Hill.
Yeah.
And then Tobias Harris went 19, technically to Charlotte.
He was a wild card for me. I didn't really know where he was.
He was a weird college player to the point where he was a big recruit, didn't really play all that well. Tennessee wasn't that good. And, yeah, I mean, I think he ended up being better than I thought he would be, for sure.
Those are good alma maters because Tobias Harris at Tennessee – Klay Thompson went to Washington State, right?
Yep.
And so immediately you think, probably not high draft picks.
Right, exactly. And well, I don't want to get into where Klay Thompson went, but one pick after the Bucks. That's all we have to say about that. All right, question number three. Which of the following players has won more than one MVP award? Shaq, Hakeem. I was going to say Hakeem Warwick. He is not one. I was going to start over. Shaq, Hakeem Olajuwon, Karl Malone, Kevin Garnett, Charles Barkley.
Are you going to tell me how many of those out of that group, or is there only one?
There's only one. All of these guys have won at least one MVP, but which one of them has won two?
I really want to say Carl because he played so many 80-game seasons. I mean, he hardly ever missed a game. I think there were just too many other good players when Barkley played.
Barkley stole one from Jordan one year.
Yeah, I know, and that's the thing with MVP awards and scoring titles is you never know when a Steve Nash is going to creep up and steal it too, you know? I'm going to say, I'll say Karl Malone.
And you're correct.
Yes.
96-97 and 98-99.
He was too healthy for too long not to win two.
Right. I'm trying to think, did one of those come when Jordan was playing baseball? 96-97, would that have been?
My typing fingers aren't fast enough to find that out.
Let me see what we got here.
That's certainly
no,
possible.
Jordan played a full 96-97 season.
Well, Malone was good. I mean, in terms of numbers and production and winning. Malone,
yeah, I mean, it's not like egregious that these guys were winning over Jordan. It's just it was kind of like LeBron from 06 through 20. Well, there's that. Yeah, voter fatigue, exactly, where, you know, there was a strong case that LeBron or even Durant, you know, for most of the stretch, like, could have won it every single year. But,
yeah,
you know, that's not the narrative that you necessarily want. Who is the last Naismith Award winner, so the MVP of college basketball, to go on to win Rookie of the Year?
So if I'm thinking of, let me name some of the Rookie of the Years that I can remember. I know we've got Wiggins, right? Derrick Rose. Brandon Roy wasn't all that long ago.
Kind of.
Derrick, did I say 2000 something? 2008 or 9? Oh, man, he's been out of the league. He had a weird career.
06-07 was Roy's rookie year.
So I would think that I want to say Rose with Memphis, and then he won Rookie of the Year. No?
No, Rose did not. He wasn't National Player of the Year.
He wasn't with Memphis?
That would have, well, he was going up against Tyler Hansbrough.
Oh,
so Hansbrough had that locked up from the moment
he's
the season
one of the
started.
Best. He's one of the best college players of all time, hands down.
Kind of I wouldn't say unprecedented, but a weird guy who literally dominated. Like, he was the best player in college basketball for like 2.5 years, but you just never considered him a good pro.
Yeah.
And like, the way his pro career has turned out has not surprised anyone at all.
Did I name any of So I said Roy, I said Wiggins, and
So there's a little bit of a complication, a caveat here.
There always is.
Because Blake Griffin would be the answer. He won the Naismith Award '09, but he wasn't. He sat out a year and then won Rookie of the Year. So does it matter? Does it count? Because someone else had won, you know, the Naismith Award in what was technically going to be his rookie year. So I don't know. Evan Turner was the Naismith winner that year. But so it would be Blake Griffin.
That's fair.
But if not, then you go back a couple more years and it's Kevin Durant. He's the last guy to win it and then immediately go in and be the Rookie of the Year that following season. I thought for sure before I looked this up that it would be Anthony Davis.
Me too.
But he did not win Rookie of the Year.
Who beat him out?
Damian Lillard.
Awards are dumb.
Weird, right? I don't remember that happening.
And that was a team that had...
He seems like somebody who had been an absolute lock. Yeah. Weird. Okay, awards. Number five. Who's the only active player who's a two-time Sixth Man of the Year award winner?
So the first two guys that come to my mind are Lou Williams and Jamal Crawford. And I'll say Crawford.
Yes, yeah. Well done. He won it with Atlanta and then last year with the Clippers, 2 years
ago,
I guess.
That guy is the definition of a journeyman.
Well, the definition of a Sixth Man, yeah, really. All right, alma mater, since you love these so much. But I'm going to narrow it down. These are all guys who have won an MVP since 1980. So it should be, you know, pretty well-known guys. We're not going to dip down and ask you Troy Daniels or anything like that. So we'll start in reverse order. We'll go from starting with 1980. And obviously there are a lot of repeat MVPs. So I'm just going with every player who went to college who's won an MVP since 1980. So Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
UCLA?
Yes. Julius Erving.
I thought he went from high school to the ABA right away.
A jersey that I very much want.
Temple?
Close. UMass.
Close enough.
That's pretty close. That's about as close as you can get. Yeah. Larry Bird.
Indiana State.
Magic Johnson.
Michigan State.
Charles Barkley.
Auburn.
Hakeem Olajuwon.
Georgetown?
That would make sense. But no, he's a Houston guy. Back when they were doing things.
That's right. Okay.
David Robinson. Maybe the last player to ever make the NBA from this school and possibly the only player that ever will. I have no factual basis to back that up, but I can't think of anyone else who's ever played there.
Gardner Webb.
Navy.
Oh, he seems too tall to be in the Navy.
He was in the Navy. I don't know. I mean, is there some sort of height limit on like ships?
I think there actually might be.
Because I don't know the full David Robinson story, and I'm kind of embarrassed that I don't. But I believe, so if you look at college, he finished up 86, 87, and he took a year off. So he didn't play, he took 2 years off to do his Navy service after graduating. So he graduates Navy in 1986, 87, after averaging 28-12 for the Naval Academy, shooting 60% from the floor, career 21-10 over 4 years. Takes 2 years off and then becomes the number one pick of the Spurs in 89-90. Isn't that crazy?
That is wild. That's pretty wild.
He's one of those guys that I don't really remember that much when he retired or was well past his peak, you know, by the time we were old enough to start following this.
I barely remember Duncan as a rookie.
This dude scored 71 points in a game. Like if you watch his, you know, his highlights, it's ridiculous. Like the athleticism and I kind of always remembered him as older David Robinson, you know, the kind of almost what Tim Duncan is right now.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly how I remember him.
30-11 one year with 5 assists and 3.5 blocks. Like, just ridiculous numbers. Like, numbers that we honestly might not see again with this type of combination of strength and athleticism and touch.
Sure.
Back to the list. Michael Jordan.
North Carolina.
Karl Malone.
I really don't know this one.
Small school.
Okay, doesn't help me any.
South. Paul Millsap. I'm trying to think of anyone else famous who went there. Louisiana Tech.
Okay, Louisiana Tech. I never would have gotten that.
Kind of one of those guys who just absolutely dominated at the mid-major level.
Sure.
13th overall pick for a guy who's, you know, arguably a top 10 player.
Yeah, all time.
Yeah, so he averaged only 17-9. His senior year at Louisiana Tech after averaging 21-10 as a freshman. So I'm assuming a lot of double teams were involved there.
Interesting.
Shaq.
LSU.
Iverson.
Georgetown.
Duncan.
Wake Forest.
Steve Nash.
It's Santa Barbara or Santa Clara?
It's one of those.
Barbara.
Clara.
Dang.
Rose.
Memphis.
And we know KD and
Texas
Curry.
Texas Davidson.
Yes.
Good question. Like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, a bonus question. I forgot to put this in here. Where did the People's Champ 2 Chainz play college basketball? He played for 1 year before the article that I read this in said, quote, the rap game came calling. Boy, did it.
The rec center down the street somewhere in...
Alabama State, a respectable program.
Okay.
Tahid Epps, a 6'6 shooting guard. There's quotes in this article from, what team was it? I want to say it was Memphis, an assistant. Yeah, it was Memphis. They said they looked at him as a replacement for Penny Hardaway.
No way.
But they said he was too... Yeah, it was on ESPN. It was on ESPN.
Okay.
It was like a feature where they had... It was kind of an oral history thing where they had like four or five people give quotes on... It was, I think it was framed as, how good was he actually? Because 2 Chainz always talks about how he played basketball, but... No, it sounded like he was actually really good. Memphis, the Memphis coach that they interviewed said that they ultimately didn't offer him because they were worried he was too skinny, but I guess he was a hell of a player in high school. One last question I have on here, I don't know who put this in, is Tracy McGrady the best shooting guard of all time? Just looking for a yes or no here, and there's only one right answer.
I will answer this after I say this. One day I would love to have Miss Whalen on this podcast to talk about
mom? Or yeah, my sister, okay.
Your...
Or my dog?
Yeah. I would love to have your mom on here to talk about your braids and your Tracy Grady love affection and the fact that she brought cookies and cake and all that stuff for Tracy McGrady's birthday. Is he the best shooting guard of all time? No. No, he's not.
I can't think of one other player who could
possibly be
the best
Kobe
shooting guard
Bryant
of all time.
Let's go. End it.
Or Michael Jordan, maybe. Yeah. You know, we can get my mom on the pod. I don't think she knows what podcasts are. I've tried to explain it a few times. But she'd probably come on. I don't, she has a lot of nicknames for me and like, it just wouldn't.
Yeah, I know. I bet you she does.
I don't think you've ever met my mom, but she's like the most prototypical,
you said that like
nice
I should
mom.
Have already met your mom. Like it's my fault.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm just saying,
she comes to Madison every now and then. Okay. I don't know if she's ever ran into you somewhere, but
I would remember.
I don't know. She like, for example, she sent me a picture of the dog, the family dog yesterday. The dog's name is Josie. And the subject line, it was just a photo of the dog, like not just the dog's just sitting there, like it was, you know, it's a cute dog, I like to see pictures of it, but it wasn't like, man, I need to send this photo. The subject line was Sweet Josie Brownski, and I'm looking like what the hell, oh it's the dog Josie, of course. Like Sweet Josie Brownski. So that's the alternative name, I guess, now for our dog. So yeah, I mean, I'll talk to her, I'll see if she can come on. She would probably love to tell that story. The T-Mac story. I'm telling you, I still get comments every now and then from people in my fifth grade class who, you know, a lot of people I'm still in touch with who
love it,
who remember how odd of a day that was for them and how glorious of a day it was for me. Of course, I'm sure I was probably wearing my Tracy McGrady jersey knowing that it was his birthday. But yeah, great stuff. So as always, I think this is we're about ready to wrap up here. But free 10 days of access to rotowire.com. If you're interested in that, just go to rotowire.com/pod. No commitment there as far as credit card, anything monetary, just 10 days of access, everything on the site that you want to take a look at. And that'll just run out after a week and a half. So rotowire.com/pod if you want to take advantage of that.
They're going to kill the love of my life.
Casey!
If I don't go back to what I was doing.
This Friday.
Our line of work is quite brutal and quite ruthless.
How far would you go for love?
You steal a truck, bring it to me. Then you make your money.
Is it dangerous?
Of course it's dangerous!
Nicholas Holt, Felicity Jones, with Ben Kingsley and Anthony Hopkins.
All this trouble, all this pain, for love.
Collide, in theaters Friday. Rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13.